listening to Sweat, Snot and Tears, brought to you by Netmums. I'm Annie O'Leary.
And I'm Wendy College. And together we talk about all of this week's sweaty, snotty and tearful parenting moments.
With guests who are far more interesting than we are.
On this week's show...
It almost feels like you're making statements with your children. And for us, it's never been about that, because I just love my son and I let him, you know, be whoever he wants to be. And I don't see why... how you want to dress or how you want to have your hair should be such a big talking point, you know, but it is to some people, and that really shocked me.
Good afternoon, listeners. Today is a sad, sad day because we're missing the lovely Annie. So it's just me and the dog. Now, Hector is known for many things, including being an idiot, but he's not known for podcasting or for helping me out with dilemmas. So I'm going to head straight to our guest and he's going to have to help me instead. Today's dilemma is, who are the biggest arses? Is it car hire companies or mortgage provider? Because both, as far as I'm concerned, can do one today. Ladies, gents, Matt Willis, please can you help me?
Hi, I think that's a really tough one. We're about to go on holiday and I've been dealing with car hire companies. We're going to wait for 3 weeks, but trying to hire a car for 3 weeks is bloody expensive, like ridiculously expensive. I was like, this is costing more than when we're staying. So I'm in that world right now. I think I found a solution.
Well, I'm glad you have. We got abandoned in Miami by our car hire company. And I'm trying to get my money back. And you can just imagine how well that's going.
Oh, my God. I mean, that's filling me with dread, because we've booked one from like a local place because it was way cheaper. And I'm like, is this real?
Well, this was a big company and they totally messed us around. My husband queued for an hour and a half to be told he didn't exist, which is always nice for your self-esteem, isn't it? Anyway, that's my woes. Tell me, any sweaty, snotty or teary moments in the Willis household this morning? Well, or this afternoon, in fact.
We had a couple yesterday. My youngest has got an ear infection, so she's dealing with that. She was off school yesterday, but we couldn't really keep her off again. Like the doctor said, she's fine to go in. So we sent her in this morning, which she was a bit not pleased about, shall we say. But then she's also got two really ridiculously wobbly teeth in the front of her mouth right now. She's got two that have come out. In my house, we call it the gunk. You know, and I just get my finger and just gunk it out.
See, mine won't let me. She's got a really wobbly front tooth too. We're at the stage, I think they're about the same age. And she runs away screaming if you go anywhere near her.
Exactly what's happening right now. I mean, my eldest, my son, couldn't wait for me to gunk them out. You know, they were like, gunk it out. You know, so, and I keep telling her, gunking doesn't hurt. Gunking doesn't, this invented word that I've made up. But she won't let me go anywhere near it. She looks like the singer of the Pogues right now. A mouth like a bag of chips. But it's, you know, she's holding on to it for dear life.
Oh, so how old is she?
She's six.
And how old are the others?
Ace is 10 and Isabel is about to be 13.
Teenager.
I know. I'm kind of seeing signs now. I mean, she's pretty cool, bless her. But like it's... you know, like she had a, you know, she has her moments. Like she's the only person I know that can be watching something on her computer whilst playing a game on her phone. I'm like, you're not doing either of these well, you know. But she's, she's one of them.
Well, I have 10 and 6, so I understand some of the joys, but I'm already thinking, oh, Christ, 13. I'm not sure. I was a ghastly teenager, so I think it's going to come back and bite me in the ass. Have they got very distinct personalities? Are they all very different?
I mean, hugely. I mean, you know, like they're so different. My eldest is quite like me. Like she looks a bit like me. You know, she's the only one who does. The other two look the spitting image of Emma. But like she's got a lot of me in her, worryingly so. you know, I can kind of see myself in there quite a lot, you know, but we spent quite a bit of time because when she was first born, I took a year off and kind of stayed at home with her and kind of like, and did all that. And Emma was doing Big Brother's little brother at the time, I think. And she kind of just got that. So she was like, right, you know, and so I stayed at home. So I feel like I've got a bit of a special bond with her. We don't have favorites, but I've got a little, there's something special about me and Wiz, you know, so it's, but she's, yeah, she's got a lot of me in her. And Ace is just all emotion. Like, he's so emotional. Like, he's, but like emotionally intelligent with it, you know, like he can sense something's up, you know, and he'll come and ask you, are you all right? You know, I'm just, oh, mate, you're bloody great, you are, you know, but he's, you know, and that's very Emma. She can sense something a mile off, you know. She's really like that. And Trixie's absolutely crazy, you know, in the best possible way.
Like, third child, they're always absolutely crazy.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. But it's so stereotypical that she's so funny. She makes me belly laugh every single day.
It's the only kid stereotype that I really believe is true, is that third children are batshit, all of them. Because I think they've got, the first two have paved the way, they've done the really, really bad stuff, and they come along and you're a bit inured to it by then. And then they're like, yeah. And they know which buttons to push from the second they come out, third kids, I reckon.
She knows exactly what she's doing. She's always after something.
So I'm sadly old enough to remember Busted the first time around. And now I have a 10-year-old who listens to you, which freaks me out a bit.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
They've got this, I must confess, they don't always listen to you in, they basically have this game they play with boy bands, whether you're good or crap, and they listen to all the songs and they judge them.
Right.
It's harsh. It's well harsh. I'm not going to tell you what they say.
How do we come off? Yeah.
To be honest, she's a little bit more drum and bass, so most boy bands don't do well with her. But what do your kids make of it? Because obviously, you and Emma are in the public eye a lot. Do they talk about it? Do you talk to them about it?
They obviously didn't know Busted when it was first around. But then when Mook Busted happened, when we got together with McFly, like, my eldest two were around and they kind of came to shows and they kind of, they thought it was really weird. You know, but they were quite, my eldest was quite into it. She found it quite cool. Like, she's really into music and she really likes, so does my son actually, but she was really into it. And then one day I picked her up from school and I'd just been at a photo shoot and I had bright green hair and I had tennis ball green hair.
Nice.
And we got back to the car. She looked at me strange. She looked all around, you know, and then we got back to the car. She must have been about six. And she went, Daddy, next time you pick me up, please wear a hat. And I was like, oh no, I'm embarrassing Dad. I was like, have you seen the other dads in your class? I'm wicked.
Gotta say, that's cool. My daughter's trampoline teacher has got green hair. She thinks he's the best thing ever. So you'd have been cool in my house. What about Emma? Because obviously she's on, I can't stop watching her delivering babies, basically, but.
Doing it again right now. She's back at the
hospital. Is she?
In shifts now, yeah.
It's, what I love about it is that it's clear she absolutely bloody loves it.
I mean, she loves it more than anything she's ever done in her life. Like, she kind of came up with the concept and kind of thought it was unachievable. And then before you knew it, she kind of made it happen. She's very much like that. And I mean, if she wasn't doing what she was doing, she always wanted to be a nurse. And she's kind of, and she, you know, I mean, the first season especially was really tough because she had to do all the training, you know, so she had to get that qualification. So she really had to be in there all the time, training as much as possible, putting in extra shifts whenever she can, you know. And it's, you know, I was going to say it's chilled out now, but it hasn't. She's still there doing everything she possibly can for it. You know, she loves it. She loves that program. And I love watching it. It's beautiful.
And do the kids kind of get involved in any of the fame with you guys now? Or do you, I know you keep them off of social media as much as possible, but do they get involved?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they've really, I don't think they really care about that stuff, you know, like they don't want to be famous, you know, they don't really, I think we've kind of instilled in that, in them, that that's kind of like a byproduct of what you do, you know. And in my experience when I was younger, it was the down point, you know, like I loved everything about it apart from being famous, you know. So it was kind of, you know, now it's kind of much, much easier for me because I've got kind of a level which I really like, where if anyone knows who I am, they're a fan. And then they've got something cool to talk about, you know, whereas with Emma, it's like she goes anywhere and people stare at her. So they don't really like that. I feel like they find that a bit uncomfortable sometimes, you know, when people come up to her, they find that a bit uncomfortable. But they deal with it quite well. And we're always, you know, really open and honest with them about everything, you know. So it's kind of I think they've kind of got a good grip on it, I think. Plus, like, there's a in my daughter's class, there's like quite a famous footballer's kid. So, like, we're nothing to them.
Yeah, yeah, you don't count. So is that why you took what was supposed to be a brief hiatus from social media and turned into an 8-month break? Was this not such a great big love of fame, why you decided you needed a rest?
Well, I kind of, do you know what? It kind of, I love a guy called Dr. Rangan Chatterjee. I love him so much. I read everything he does, listen to his podcast, watch everything he's on. And he did a 7-day hiatus, then he did a 30-day. I thought, I'm going to do 7 days because I made these rules. Like, I don't read comments. I don't kind of do that. I post and ghost and all that kind of stuff. But before I knew it, I was doing everything. And then I found myself just slipping into a hole. And to be honest, I've just finished a musical called Waitress. And when I first started the job, I was kind of prepping in my room. I was getting myself ready to go on. And in between scenes, I go back to my dressing room and think about what I'm going to do next. And then before I knew it, I was coming off stage and flicking, you know, and scrolling and then hearing my cue and running on stage. You know, I was just like, this has got, you know, and I've got problems with addiction left, right and center. And I was like, this is becoming a bit of an issue. You know, I just don't like my behavior around it, which is what it was. Like, I kind of have a problem with social media. Social media is what it is, but I don't like the way I was behaving with it. So I kind of went, right, I'm going to do 7 days. And then after 7 days, I thought, right, I'm going to try and do 30, you know. And then before I knew it, I didn't really miss it. And my life seemed to be kind of quite cool. And I kind of, you know, and I kind of felt much more chill in a way, you know, and I kind of really enjoyed that. So I just thought, you know what, I don't really have anything to say right now or anything to kind of, I'm in a 10-month contract with the musical. I don't have anything to promote apart from this. And they're doing that for me. There's posters up, there's things doing, you know, so I don't really need to do that. So I kind of just went, you know what, I'm going to stay off it for a while. Before I knew it, it was 8 months. And then the only thing I found quite hard is I didn't know what anyone was talking about.
Totally disconnected from social life.
I don't read the news. I don't look at the news apps. Well, I was like, I had no idea. People having conversations, I'm like, bleh.
But that's quite telling, isn't it, that how much we rely on social media to be our news feed, because it's not a straight news feed. It's just someone's opinion.
Yeah. And I think you just get used to the stuff you see, you know, whereas like people would go, oh, look at this. And they'd show me something. I'd go, that's bollocks, you know, but then like now I'm like, woo. It's really weird, you know, but it's, you know, when I came back, I had a big, long time to think about it. I'm like, right, what do I want to do? What do I want to, you know, kind of like, what I've got certain things that I'm doing right now that I'm building. And I'm like, right, I want to get into this. And like, how can I use this in a way that it serves me without taking over me in a way, and kind of, and relying on that kind of, those, what are they, likes or whatever, you know, like, I don't have to worry about that stuff. I just want to put up what I want to put up and kind of then, you know, be able to kind of come away from it.
And how do you deal with it with the kids? Because we're just dipping our toe into the kind of wanting to do social media. And obviously with a 13-year-old, there's got to be some questions. How do you deal with it with her?
Well, we've kind of just said no for a while because, you know, we watched The Social Dilemma and I've watched all these other kind of docs about it and about what that is. And, you know, and kind of I can't see much good from it for kids, you know, like I can't see why, you know, I can see lots of why nots, you know, but I can't see any definitive why apart from your friends do it. I did a lot of stuff my friends did and regretted it, you know, so that's not a really good enough argument for me, you know, and the fact that she's the only girl in the class who doesn't have it, I understand that. You know, I understand that she feels that and understand what she's going through, but we're at the moment, we're still staying strong and saying no. When she's, you know, 14, 15, I think it's going to, you know, the thing is it's unavoidable. You know, it is the way that, you know, we act now within social media. You know, it is a big part of everyday life, you know. So I think at some point we're going to have to cross that bridge. But right now we're still saying no. Like, she wants TikTok on or anything. I don't really know enough about that, but everything I see about TikTok seems quite fun. you know, so it feels a bit less, I don't know, less, I mean, on a scale of Twitter, Instagram, TikTok seems a bit more fun and a bit less, you know, much, but I don't really know enough about it. I've got it on my phone now, so I should maybe have a little bit of a go on it for myself and see what that's about, you know, but.
I'm impressed though, because it's hard to say no to them for things that they really want. It's right to say no to them at times, but it is tricky when they're saying, but everyone else has got it, Dad.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's really tough, you know. But the thing is, we've always talked about it. We talked about it since they were young, you know, like, and the fact that their faces aren't on our social media and the fact that we keep them out of that, we tell them why, you know, is I think they understand, you know. I think however much she wants it, she understands why we don't want her to have it, you know. And eventually we'll have a discussion together and I'm sure we'll come to some kind of agreement about it. But at the moment, we're still managing to stay strong.
Well, there was a big, I can't remember when it was. It wasn't maybe last year when Emma put a picture up of your son wearing a pink crop top and there was a massive hoo-ha around it and everyone was like, oh, breaking gender stereotypes. And I remember at the time Emma was just like, he's just wearing a pink t-shirt, would you all chill out, it's not that big a deal.
Well, that's exactly my point. I think it almost feels like you're making statements with your children and kind of like, and for us it's never been about that. Like, it's never been, it's kind of forced us into these conversations, you know, when really we don't, like, I don't feel equipped enough to have them because I just love my son and I let him, you know, be whoever he wants to be, you know, which is, you know, within parameters, you know, but like, like, I don't see why, you know, how you want to dress or how you want to have your hair should be such a big talking point, you know, but it's, it is to some people and that really shocked me. You know, and I think, you know, what happened after that really kind of made me kind of go, yep, stay away from that, you know, and it kind of, it really cemented that for me.
And keep them away from it as much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, that was what I meant. Like, but I'm just like, right, you know what, this is a world that you don't need to enter right now. You're, you know, I think they say until you're 25, your brain isn't fully formed or something. So I'm like, I don't really have to worry about this shit right now. You know, like, I mean, I don't have to worry what some dickhead thinks of you, you know, and I don't give a shit. So, you know, why should you have to deal with that? And you don't, unless you put yourself in that world, you know. I mean, we deal with it occasionally from kind of people around who may think he's a girl or something, you know, but we can kind of solve that quite quickly.
And is he okay with that? Is he pretty chilled? He's just who he is and quite happy?
I mean, sometimes it gets to him, you know, it's like, I'm a boy. You know, I just like to wear pink and I've got long blonde hair. What's the issue? You know, like, but he likes to wear all colours. It's not just like, I mean, it's not like he, you know, lives in sparkling sequins and stuff. And like, you know, it's not like he wears a princess dress every day. But, you know, it's, that's who he is. And he just likes to be who he wants, you know. And I think he kind of can't quite understand why everyone else can't accept that, you know. And I think he's right, you know. He's right to think that, you know, why can't people accept that? I mean, it's just, you know, it's not as big a deal, I think, as people try to make it, you know, but for some people it is, you know, so then you get on both sides of the argument. Before you know it, I'm fighting for something I don't know what I'm fighting for, you know, and I'm like, I'm just loving my son.
But all you can do is teach him to be happy with who he wants to be. That's it. And hope he's resilient enough to kind of deal with whatever gets thrown in his direction.
Yeah, totally. I think you're totally right. I mean, that's kind of my job, right? Is to kind of just look after him, make sure he's all right, and make sure he makes decisions based on what he wants, you know. And that's something which I really try to instill in him is, you know, don't make decisions based on what other people think you should do. You know, I mean, there's certain laws and rules that you should probably follow, but other people's opinions, you know, fuck them.
Yeah, done. You've been really open about past addictions and all the joys and traumas and tribulations. And I guess, are you open with the kids about it as well? Do you worry that that's something that might be in them? And do you talk to them really openly about it?
I think it's something that's in a lot of people. You know, I think, I'm very open about it. You know, I've recently kind of, you know, been a bit more open about it because my daughter, who's turning 13, is you know, going to things and seeing things, seeing people behave in a certain way, you know, like at parties and things, not her friends, but like at family do's or adults or something like that. And there has been a few times when, you know, in the past, where they've said, why don't you drink, daddy? You know, and I've kind of just said, I can't control myself once I do that. You know, something, once I have anything that alters my state of mind, I can't control what happens next. And so I don't, because I like who I am, you know, and when I do that, I don't like who I am, you know, and I think they kind of understand that. And, you know, like, I mean, and everyone else in our family drink, like Emma has a drink occasionally, but like, I haven't seen her drunk for years, you know, but it's not in our house, you know, like we don't drink at dinner. We don't drink in the house, you know, occasionally there'll be a party and we might have a can of Porn Star Martini. But it's not really part of our life, you know. It's not really part of our day to day kind of life. So they don't really see that, and so they don't really have to come into contact with it very often. I mean, you know, I've kind of thought about that quite a lot. You know, what would I do if they come back drunk or high? You know, and I'm like, what? How would I react to that? You know, and I don't quite know the answer to that.
But that's a question all parents ask. Irrespective of whether you drink or not, I've asked that question. What happens when they first start deciding? Back in our day, it was white lightning, but whatever your poison is, whatever it is that they're going to try something.
Yeah. And, you know, and in some ways they probably should, you know, at a certain age, you know, but I do agree that I don't think kids should be drinking until they're 18. When I see people giving their teenagers a beer or a glass of wine or whatever that is, a glass of champagne or something, I always feel like, not sure how I feel about that, you know, like, because I think there is an age limit on it for a reason. And I think, it's a funny little subject, isn't it? Because, you know, and people always go, oh, well, the French, you know, teach their kids to drink wine and they drink it well and they drink it normally or whatever. I'm like, really? There's no alcoholics in France. You know, there's no drug problems in France, is there? You know, so it's it always baffles me, that argument. But you know, I think, you know, with anything like this, it's about kind of knowing what you're going into, I think. You know, like, and with drink and drugs, it's a very you know, it's a subject I know a lot about, you know, and I kind of, and I still try to know as much about it. I try to keep up to date with everything that's going on in that world. And there's fascinating things coming out right now. Like, the science in addiction right now is blowing my mind about what, you know, what they're tracking to what causes that, or, you know, cause it's always been, you know, kind of, you're an alcoholic. That's just it, you know, when actually that's not quite it. You know, there's lots of things that can come into play there and lots of things that can maybe be helped.
Or avoided. So when you stopped drinking and you stopped using, did that change your support network? Do you have a kind of dad network? I'm sure there's band members and there's loads of guys around, but do you have that support network? Who do you go to?
To be honest, no. I do now. Some of my friends have had kids now, but when I was 26 when I had Isabel, and I was kind of by far the youngest out of my kind of group of mates who had a child. And it was kind of, and it was quite, you know, it was so far from my mates' radars. But when I stopped drinking and using, I stopped hanging around with all the people I drank and used with, you know, so I kind of lost that network of people for a very valid reason, you know, and like, and they weren't all bad people, but I just chose to kind of, like, that's a world which I don't no longer want to be in. And I choose to stay away from it. But I think, you know, but when I had Isabel, like, it was I think the number one influence I had was Emma's dad. Like, he's been the biggest influence on me as a man, if I'm honest. He's just the most kind of, like, perfect role model of a human. You know, he's just a really great bloke, and in every possible way, he's a fantastic father. He's a fantastic granddad. And he gives his heart and soul every day to everyone, you know, he's a really good soul. So I really, really value that.
We all need Emma's dad. Oh, I thought, like the sound of him.
Yeah, he's brilliant. He's great.
What do you find hardest about being a parent? What's your button? What's the bit? I'm always I've got the temper, so I find it hard to keep my temper when they're driving me potty.
I have a bit of a temper too. I try to keep a lid on it, but occasionally it flares up. I mean, they can tell when daddy's pissed off, you know. But I think trying to pick the right language, you know, for me, because so many things that have been imprinted in my brain from childhood that don't fucking matter and don't aren't the right thing to say. It's so weird, all these things that kind of come back. I'm like, wow, that's my fucking stepdad talking. What is that about?
It's hardwired in though, isn't it? You hear yourself and you're like, yeah, that's my dad. I can hear it. Or that's my mum. Or granddad Frank said that.
It's so strange how it happens.
And it's often really not what you want to be conveying to your kids.
Terrible advice, you know, like it's so weird, you know, like sometimes so I really try when I'm talking to them to kind of think about what I'm gonna say, you know, like if I'm trying to, you know, teach them a lesson, for instance, like, it doesn't have to be telling them off, but just teach them, I'm very careful with how I say it, you know, and I really think about what I'm gonna say, because otherwise I can say something I'm like, oh fuck, are you gonna hold on to that? Don't hold on to that, that's bullshit, you know. So you know, I'm really kind of careful about that stuff. So I find that the hardest thing, kind of communicating with them something important without saying something that they will hold on to, which will be detrimental to them.
Isn't it funny though? Because do you think we worry more than our parents did? Like you just said then, oh God, if I say that, are they going to hold on to it? I do that all the time. And I don't think our parents did that in the same way. They just fed us and clothed us and sent us on our way. Don't think they fretted about the psychological damage of us for the next 10 years.
No, but I'm fucked, you know, so I've got to be a bit careful about what I put into the world.
Now, I read that you love planning and you love planning your day. Now, I bloody love a list. So how else do you stay vaguely half sort of sane on a day-to-day basis other than lists?
I have a ridiculous routine that keeps me as sane as I can possibly be. You know, so I have a morning routine. My nighttime routine is out the window at the moment. I've been away on tour for 10 months. I mean, to be honest, lockdown happened. I hadn't worked for 18 months and someone offered me a very good gig that was away from home. And I was like, boop, sign me up. You know, so I then didn't really think about the consequences of that, signing that document. But, you know, so it was 10 months and I loved the show. I loved everything about it, but it was away for 10 months. So I kind of had to get used to kind of a different kind of life in a way. You know, I'd come home usually after the show on a Saturday night. If I was less than 4 hours away, I'd drive home. But then sometimes I'd come back on the Sunday morning, but then I'd have the Sunday with them and then I'd go again on the Monday morning. So I really missed them, you know, like, I just miss life, you know. I just miss, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, like the cast were great, everyone was great, but I was I don't go out, you know, there's lots of things that were happening which I wasn't a part of, so I was kind of on my own a lot. So I kind of had to figure out a brand new kind of routine for my day, because otherwise nothing happens and I can get a bit in my own head. So I'm kind of worked out whilst I was away, and then I kind of planned what I was going to do for when I get back, you know. And I mean, my day is like is within an inch of its life. Like if I show you my diary, it's like everything's got times opening, and I stick to it, because otherwise I can very easily sit on my ass and do nothing, you know, and then I feel like shit, you know. So so I wake up in the morning, I do something called the morning miracle at the moment, which is like a little hour to myself before I get the kids up, and I kind of meditate. I think about what I'm going to do with my day, I plan my day, kind of have a gratitude list, and I do bit of work on recovery and kind of what I'm going to do to stay clean and sober. And then I get the kids up and mayhem happens for the next hour. And then they go to school and then my day kind of begins, you know, and I kind of usually start my day with some kind of training. Then I start work. And at the moment I'm doing some different stuff, which is kind of out of my comfort zone. So I'm sat at a keyboard quite a lot, kind of going, which is amazing. And I love it. And I love it so much. It's so funny. Like you know, with writing, I think I've always kind of felt like, because I wasn't very good at school, like I couldn't do that. But then once you kind of get I think it's the same as everything. No one can do anything until they try, you know. And I kind of now I sit down. I just love it. It's a bit of time to kind of myself, and I really enjoy that process.
Interesting. And you're also planning a bit of a special one-off show, aren't you?
Kinky Boots.
Kinky Boots.
Yeah. That's kind of, I worked with a company called the LMTO, which is the London Musical Theatre Orchestra, and they're incredible. We did a Christmas carol together in the Dominion during COVID, and we kind of got it in, they got it in the Dominion like during that time, and everyone was spaced out in masks. It was really weird. But then we managed 11 shows, and then we got shut down out of 45. So it was a really amazing thing. And we were all kind of gutted, but then they came back to me and they said, how'd you fancy doing this? And I went to watch Kinky Boots in town, and a guy called David Hunter was playing the part that I'm playing. He's incredible. I remember watching it kind of going, I could never do that, you know? So when it came in, I was like, run towards things that scare you. So I said yes, and I'm working on it every day. I've got a singing teacher, which I see 3 times a week anyway, you know, for this.
Do you prefer theatre to gigs? Or is it just too different?
It's kind of, you know, the way I explain it, it's kind of like swimming and rowing. You know, they're both in the same water, but they're very different disciplines. I mean, theatre is, what I love about it is, even though it's the same thing every night, it's completely different. And you can make of it what you want, you know, and whatever happens on stage, you've always got tomorrow, you know. So which is good for me, because I can beat myself up within an inch of my life for shit that I do. And but I'm very good now at going, it's all right, tomorrow we'll get it, you know. So whereas this is just one gig, so, you know,
just the one, no pressure.
It'd be brilliant. I love the music. I mean, Cyndi Lauper wrote the score. It's so good.
It's such a good show. It's just brilliant. And are you allowed to tell us what the writing is for? What's next?
I'm writing a book. I've been kind of umming and ahhing about it for a couple of years. And it's coming together really well. It's aimed at teenage boys. It's kind of, I think, you know, being a teenage boy for me was a very weird, troublesome time, you know. And throughout my life, I've made horrendous mistakes, which I wish someone would go, maybe you shouldn't do that, mate, you know. And through that, I've kind of developed kind of ways that I live my life, and like and they seem to steer me well, you know. So I mean, I still fuck up all the time, you know, but I learn from them, and I kind of try not to do it again, you know. So it's and I think, you know, teenage boys right now, like, I listen to my daughter talking about what stuff is happening at the school. I'm like, what? So yeah, I kind of I think I had so many backwards kind of forced upon me thoughts of what a man was, you know, what it meant to be a man. And I was so wrong. And so many of them were so couldn't be further from who I am today. But I held on to them for so long, and they served me really badly, you know. And it's only over time that I've kind of realized that without knowing, we pass these things on. And kind of like, I think there's so many kind of stereotypes about men, and, you know, and I think you know, we got to talk about that, you know. We kind of got to think about what they actually mean. I mean, you know, there's so much about kind of strength and weakness, whereas, you know, I don't think you should confuse weakness and vulnerability, you know. So it's such a big thing. Like, and for me, there was no weakness. Like, I never cried, you know, and I didn't cry until I was 29, I think, you know. Like, and I didn't, not once, and eventually it just opened the floodgates, and I feel fucking great, you know. But and that was forced upon me, you know. That was kind of like, that was my era kind of telling me that boys don't cry, you know. And like, and you know, that's that did not serve me well as a human, as a father, as a husband, as an actor. It was really, you know, I think in some ways, you know, we build up this kind of scaffolding around us. Like, we build up these things, boys don't cry, you know, keep, can't carry on, you know, all these kind of things that we kind of build up around us, and they become who we are. But actually, that's not who we are. We need to break that scaffolding down and just kind of go, actually, what, you know, what is it to be you know, a man and a kind of in today's world, you know, and I kind of think, you know, I'm not saying I've got it all right. I make mistakes all the time, but, and I will gladly talk about them, you know, because I think that's the way you kind of get through them as well, you know? So it's, yes, I just kind of wanted to write about that and kind of wanted to kind of, I wish I'd had something like this, you know, that could have gone, oh, dude, you're all right. You're okay.
We, I said the same. So Bryony Gordon did a similar book for girls, the Telegraph columnist Bryony Gordon. And I read that and thought, oh my God, I wish this had been around when I was a teenager. So that's what you're going to do for boys.
Hopefully.
If you get it finished by the deadline, crack on.
This is just the first pass as well. So, well, you know, so we got a lot to do, but I do love it. I ramble on though.
That's fine. That's all good. That's what editors are for.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I hear.
Now, very important question. What's for tea and who's cooking?
Oh, I'm cooking tonight.
Oh.
I haven't quite decided on what's for tea.
It's screaming barbecue. The weather's screaming barbecue.
I know. It really is. We had a barbecue tonight. So we had a barbecue on Sunday. Controversial. It is screaming barbecue. Actually, that's a really good idea. I love a barbecue. But I have got in the freezer, I found some cottage pie mix that I made ages ago. I made like far too much. So I've got that ready to go. Just got to stick some potato on that. But it's not really cottage pie weather, is it?
That's a bit November for a hot June day, I've got to tell you.
Yeah, you're so right. You're so right. So do you know what? I think I might do barbecue.
Sorry, Willis children, if you don't want barbecue tonight, that's my fault. Now, my final question for you, which isn't just because of who you are. We ask everybody this. You have to imagine, and this is always much easier when Annie's here because she invented this question. So I always blame it on her. Imagine that you're tucking me into bed, Matt, and I'm one of your kids. It's not weird. And sing me your family lullaby, because everybody has one. Everyone has something they sing their kids.
I mean, I'm sure this one has been used quite a lot, but my wife has sung it to all of our kids. And, I've got a different one. My wife has always sung, you are my sunshine, my little sunshine. I got the words wrong. But she changes little instead of only because there's three of them.
Okay.
So she sings that. But my son was terrible at sleeping. Like he was like literally all over the bed, climbing out the door. Like he wouldn't go to sleep. So but he loved the Muppets, but he loved the movie. Not the most recent movie with Ricky Gervais, the one before that. And there was a song in it, which was everything is great. Everything is grand. I've got the whole wide world in the palm of my hand. Everything is perfect. It's falling into place. And I'd sing that to him on repeat for about an hour. And I'd slowly get quieter and quieter until I was.
And then did you do the tiptoe when you stop and you tiptoe out of the room?
I mean, so many times. I mean, a lot of the time I'd fall asleep with him most, like four nights out of the week. But it was a lot. But that song, whenever I hear it, reminds me of that exact moment.
Well, thank you, Matt. What a lovely way to spend a sunny afternoon.
Wow, thank you so much. What a great chat.
Good luck with your book. Take care. And I hope the kids enjoy the barbecue.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Bye.